This Is Your Life, Season 2, Episode 5. Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. My name's Michelle Cachette. I'm your co-host, and I'm sitting in the studio with Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle.
Well, for most people, the word confrontation is a bad word.
It is. It creates all this emotion in us because most of us, at least, well, I'll speak for myself, I avoid it. I don't like confrontation. And I know you don't either because we talked about this.
Yeah, I don't like it either. In fact, I would even say I really hate it. I mean, it creates such negative emotions in me. I tend to avoid it. And generally speaking, I really don't do it well. In fact, just last week, my brother and I, who is kind of a leadership expert himself, or at least he's someone that studies it and wants to learn more about leadership. He's in that kind of world a lot. He and I were having a conversation about our leadership styles, and I asked him, what do you think your greatest leadership weakness is? And he shared with me his, and then he asked the same question of me, of course. And I told him, it's confrontation. I'm just not good at it. And it's a necessary part of what we have to do in relationship and leadership, but I'm not good at it. So I'm hoping you can help me with that today.
Well, I'm somebody that's not good at it either, naturally, but I've had to learn, and unfortunately, most of us don't get training in this. You know, nobody says, hey, we're going to have a confrontation course, or I'm going to, you know, educate you on this.
And who would sign
this
up for that, right?
Like, exactly.
We wouldn't even really, because we don't like it, so why would we sign up for a confrontation course?
But it is
course?
Possible to do better at it.
Absolutely.
And you know, to be honest, I don't ever want to get comfortable with it, because I think that feeling the gravity of it is part of doing it well, but I definitely think it's possible to do it better, and to at least see the path so that you can get through it and know that you're going to be effective in the process.
And I wonder, too, if part of the reason we don't like confrontation, the word confrontation, is because too often it becomes a conflict.
Yes.
And not all confrontation has to be a conflict. But in our experience, so many confrontations are just full of kind of heavily emotional conflict. And that's what makes us not like it.
And so many of them end badly. You know, we've all been gone through the experience where we've severed a relationship, or at least damage a relationship, and it's not the same after that. I mean, I can think back a number of years ago. This is actually a very painful experience, but where I confronted a friend of mine who I thought was in the middle of an affair, and I knew his family very well and his kids and all of that. It was very painful for me to watch him go through that, and I felt like I had to speak into it, not from a position of being judgmental, but it didn't go well. He didn't receive it, denied it, and the relationship really has never been the same to this day.
Which is not what we want to have happen.
That's
which,
right.
Again, why we often avoid conflict, because we don't want to lose the relationship. Now, on the flip side, one thing I've learned as I've gotten older is that when confrontation is handled in the right way, it actually can make it can make the relationship stronger. And from that standpoint, confrontation is actually a powerful tool for us to have in our tool belt.
Well, I've certainly seen this in my marriage. You know, it's kind of like the confrontation is the doorway to deeper intimacy. If you're willing to walk through it and willing to learn from it and do it in the right way. You know, as long as there's no confrontation, you can do that if you want to keep your relationship superficial. But when people start colliding and their interests and their wants and their desires and their backgrounds and all that come in contact with one another, you're going to have conflict. It's inevitable.
It's impossible for us to be in relationship with other people without some amount of friction.
Yep.
I mean, it's just going to happen. And for us as leaders, we can effectively use confrontation and those moments of friction in order to strengthen those relationships as long as we know the right steps. So today you're going to walk us through the appropriate steps of handling a confrontation. It's going to come up for all of us at one time or another, but you're going to give us the tools to increase the likelihood that it ends up with a positive outcome. It won't guarantee it, but the chances of it ending positive will be greatly enhanced if we follow these steps.
And the reason it won't guarantee it, we should say this too, is because you have another person on the other end of the transaction, so to speak. And they're going to make their own choices about how they receive what you say. I mean, I've been in situations where I really have been considerate, respectful. I've had a considered response, and it's been, I think, delivered in all the right ways. And still the other person chooses to respond in a way where they just don't receive it. And there's nothing you can do. I mean, you have the sort of the satisfaction of knowing that you did everything you could. But having said that, I think those are few and far between. I've got very few of those stories and a lot of positive stories about successful confrontations.
You know, it reminds me of a verse in the Bible that actually, and I'll paraphrase because I don't have it memorized completely, but to do everything within your power to live at peace with one another.
Yes.
And so today we're going to do everything in our power to have a peaceful outcome to a confrontation, knowing that, you know, some things are going to be outside of our power, but the chances will be much higher that we'll have a peaceful resolution. So let's get started. What is the first step for an effective confrontation?
Well, I think the first step is to give the other person the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people don't wake up in the morning with the intent to make you miserable or to ruin your day or anything else. I mean, it just happens. You know, they probably unintentionally offend you, or maybe you misread it. There could be a lot of different reasons for this. But to start by giving them the benefit of the doubt and realize that there are probably 1,000 different reasons why people do what they do. And we don't always have to take it so personally.
Mm-hmm.
And so my own perspective is I'm not going to confront it unless I'm seeing a pattern. You know, if it's severe enough, maybe I would, but I'm looking for a pattern. If it's a pattern of behavior, then it probably needs to be confronted, because mm-hmm. if that person was aware of it, and this is kind of my assumption, if they were aware of it, they would correct it, but they're probably not aware of it, or they need to be at least called out on it. But for me, I want it to be a pattern. So the first time, maybe the first couple times it happens, I'm going to let it slide before I confront it.
What I have found, too, with this first step, that is, if I take the time to give the person the benefit of the doubt, like even just stepping back and say, okay, what other factors might be contributing or influencing this person's behavior or action at this moment in time? If I stop, there are so many times I don't even need to go through the other steps here, because I end up finding out that as I give them the benefit of that, there's a good explanation for why I'm seeing what I'm seeing. So let's say somebody just is snippy one day and they just don't have a very kind or compassionate response. And if I stop long enough to give the benefit of the doubt, I might find out that they just went through a huge loss the week before, or their child is struggling or whatever. And then all of a sudden I go, you know what? I don't need to confront here, because I just need to have grace.
Well, there's that story in The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People that Dr. Covey tells. And I can't remember if he's telling it about himself or somebody else, but there's a man who's on a train, like a subway, and this family comes on, this man comes on with his children, and his children are really unruly. They're running around the train, they're making all this noise. And the man's thinking, why don't you get control of your kids? What in the world is wrong? And the man is just like completely oblivious to his children's behavior. And so finally, the man who's kind of the innocent bystander confronts the man, and he says, I am so sorry. He said, my children just lost their mother today. And everybody's just a little bit out of whack. And, you know, then all of a sudden he has compassion, you know, mm-hmm. he realizes that shifted everything.
True, which it comes back to what you said a moment ago, is to look for the pattern. So just because somebody has a behavior or action or does something that you think needs to be addressed doesn't necessarily mean that it needs to be confronted.
Yeah, we need to extend grace, I think. And I will say, though, this, I have known people who are unwilling to confront and let that be an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
So they beat themselves up. They say, well, my behavior's worse than that, or you know, I don't have any place to be confronting that person, or they're in a position of power above me and I can't confront it. And by the way, I want to talk about that in this mm-hmm. episode, too, because sometimes the confrontation is not just, you know, with our peers or with our subordinates, but sometimes we have to confront people that we work for, and I've had to do that on several occasions, and that can get a little
dicey.
That's
tricky, yes.
But I want to make sure we talk about that.
Okay,
so let's
we'll come back to that later. Okay, so first, give the person the benefit of the doubt. That's the first step. And then at that point, if you feel like even after giving the benefit of the doubt that this is something that for the other person's best interests and the best interest of your relationship, that it still needs to be confronted, what's the next step?
The next step is just to purpose that you're going to speak directly to the person responsible.
As opposed to speaking to everybody around them except for that person.
Well, and this is how it goes typically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than confronting the person, we oftentimes talk about the person to people who have no ability to change the situation. And it's gossip is exactly what it is.
Well, what you do is you create a situation where you now need to be confronted because you're
truly
participating in something that's not healthy or helpful for anyone.
Well, and I think one of the most powerful things that leaders need to take away from this is that you're constantly modeling to the people that you're leading what is appropriate behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So if talking about that person, and it might be you talking about your boss in a negative light rather than confronting him, or talking about a peer in another division or another department within your organization, you're modeling to the people that report to you, to the people you're trying to lead, what's acceptable behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've always got to be conscious of that. And I would always like for somebody to come directly to me. Mm-hmm. So I want to model that behavior so that my people will do the same thing. If they've got an issue with me, I want them to come to me, not talk about me.
So interesting, because when we, you know, you may be talking about a boss negatively with your peers, which creates kind of a sense of connection and connectedness. But someday you might end up being the boss.
Yeah.
And then people already know your character based on what you did as not being the boss, as being the employee. And what does that say about you?
Well, have you ever had this experience where you're talking with some peers and they're talking about somebody who's not present?
Mm-hmm.
And it occurs to you, you think, what do they say about me?
Oh,
when I'm not present.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always go there because I know if they're willing to talk about somebody else in my presence, they're willing to talk about me.
It really creates a culture of distrust, cynicism, nothing good.
When I've had that happen, at the same time that I'm more cautious in those conversations, I also am very convicted. Because the truth is I know for a fact that if I talk about somebody else, they're also thinking the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That I wonder, I'm sure she talks about me when I'm not around too.
Yeah. So we got to be careful with that.
So careful.
Yeah.
Okay. So speak directly to the person responsible would be the second step and such a critical part of this process. Again, our goal is for a healthy confrontation to happen.
Yes.
And so that's why it's so critical. If you don't talk to directly to the person, it just, I mean, you're just behind before you even get started. Okay, what is the third step?
Well, really to affirm your commitment to the relationship, you've got to contextualize the whole discussion.
Is that what you open with, basically?
Yeah, that's what I would open
with. Like, open with this kind of affirmation?
I would say something like, you know, Michelle, I'm really committed to this relationship, and I value this relationship so much, but there's something that's missing or something that's in the way that I feel like I need to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm putting a high value on the relationship when I initiate that discussion. And it's in that relational context that we're having this discussion. So it's not because I'm ticked off, you know, because I want to get even, because I'm feeling vengeful, because I'm feeling hurt. Sometimes all that is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to kind of wait until I process through that. So I'm not speaking out of that hurt place because hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've all heard that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had those situations where I've been too reactive, spoken too quickly, haven't contextualized it, and done further damage to the relationship and moved myself further apart from the very person that I'm trying to reconcile with or trying to develop a deeper level of intimacy.
You know, there's something about affirming the relationship out loud because it doesn't just benefit the person that's hearing it, but also you. You're hearing yourself say this, which reminds you of the value that you're putting on the relationship. It kind of keeps you on task.
It does. And I think people can receive it if they know that the relationship with you is secure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that feels tenuous, like you've written them off, or they can't repair it, they feel hopeless, nothing good's going to come out of that. So to reaffirm the relationship just puts it in the proper context and lays the foundation for the discussion that follows.
I've probably seen this play out most powerfully in marriage, where when you have some kind of difficult conversation that you need to have, that if I don't affirm, you know, I just want to say before we even talk that I love you. I believe that you have my best interest in mind. I believe that your heart is in the right place. We're on the same team, all that kind of stuff before I go into, but you know, when you do this, it hurts me. Or when, you know, before I launch into that, I really need to set that foundation first.
Well, I had a discussion like that with Gail a number of years ago. It was probably 12 years ago or so. And I was really involved in my job. I had a very responsible position in my corporation. It was before I was the CEO at Thomas Nelson, but I was the president at the time. And she sat me down and she said, I really need to have a talk with you. Of course, when she says that, I know, gulp, you know, I'm in trouble. But then she just said, look, I know your heart is right. I know that you're working hard for the family. You love your family. And I'm so grateful for all that you do. But I just have to have this conversation because I think what's at risk right now is not just our relationship, yours and mine, but your relationship with the kids. And we just need to talk about the amount of time you're spending at work.
Mm.
But she put it in the context like that, where it was easy for me to hear. I knew she had my best interest at heart. She wasn't ticked off. She wasn't angry. She wasn't coming from a needy place.
Mm-hmm.
She was coming from the position of she's a steward of this larger relationship that she's trying to manage and trying to protect. And she spoke into my life. And so I totally heard it.
Well, and such a beautiful thing, because she said from the beginning that I believe your heart is right, which is so powerful, is to believe that the intent of the other person is good. That goes back to the benefit of the doubt as well.
And that's as important as the first thing about giving them the benefit of the doubt, is to believe that their intention, even though it may be poorly executed, is good. And that's a belief, you know, and it may not, it may be unwarranted, but I, you know, love believes the best. And
it does. And I find believing that the intentions of someone else is good is a far better approach, even if, you know, maybe it's not true. Maybe the other person is being malicious. But if I constantly approach relationships believing the other person is an enemy or trying to be malicious, it just is, it's bad news every single time. It's much better to come at it from a standpoint of belief.
And sometimes you will be abused and you know, people will be taking advantage of you. And maybe they do have a malicious intent, but I don't care. I, from my perspective, I would rather assume the positive and operate out of that because I think it's healthier for me and it's going to be more effective in dealing with that person than put them in a defensive posture where they're trying to defend their motives, which I can't know anyway. I can't see into their heart.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And I think of it, too, when other people have made judgments about me, I just wish they would have trusted my heart and my intentions. And so it feels so good when there's someone that's willing to do that, that motivates me a little bit more to do the same in return.
Well, and I've said to people before when I've offended them, I said, look, I promise this is not coming from a place of malice. It's coming from a place of incompetence.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been malicious. I'm just incompetent.
Can I steal that? That's good stuff. So good. Okay, so give the person the benefit of the doubt. Speak directly to the person responsible. Step three, affirm your commitment to the relationship. What's the fourth step?
To outline the issue as objectively as possible.
Oh, now this is easier said than done.
It is.
Because our emotions get involved.
They do get involved. And for me, and I think you can probably relate to this as a writer, I have to write it out.
So that's probably a smarter way to do it. Because otherwise
just
I just go
stuff.
On bunny trails and the emotions take over. Yeah, so writing it out
I literally
smart.
Come up with the talking points like we teach in SCORE.
Do you have a spreadsheet?
No, but I do. I do typically put it in some kind of document, usually in Evernote, where I just do kind of a brain dump. Usually for me, it begins as part of my journaling practice. So I do that daily. I journal. And I'll just write it out because I don't know really what I'm feeling until I express it in written form. That just helps me. But then to try to reduce it to the two or three issues that make up this thing so I can kind of give it some structure and talk about it in a coherent way so that the other person actually has something to work with. You know, so I'm not just like, you know, backing up my dump truck and unloading a bunch of garbage on him, but I'm giving him something. Here's the specific issues that that we need to deal with and we need to talk through.
I would imagine that practice of kind of writing it down, it helps you to really clarify what is really the pain point for you.
Yes.
And sometimes that's really more cloudy than we think.
Yep.
You know, we think it's so clear until we start to really sit down and go, okay, what's really at root here? What is really bothering me about this? And it ends up being something behind the obvious, you know, that's something a little bit deeper. So writing it down helps clarify that. But then I think it probably also keeps you, well, you said this, keeps you from doing the dump on the other person, where then you just start, you know, picking up every stone you can possibly think of that irritates you about the other person and throwing it at them. You've really narrowed it down. Like, we're only going to address one or two or three things here, nothing else.
Right.
Everything else is off the table.
And writing it down also has a way of putting it into perspective, because the problem can really feel big and gnarly. And then you write it down and you go, okay, this is manageable. It makes you hopeful. You think, okay, we can deal with this. I had an assistant years ago who just had a hard time getting to the office on time. And her performance was actually great, but she was just tardy a lot. And so, you know, she had a family and all that. And so the first couple of times I excused it, but then it started impacting me.
Okay.
So as I started writing that down, I said, okay, what I want to talk to you about is your punctuality, about being to work on time. And kind of I moved from that to, you know, it communicates to me, and I'm sorry I feel this way, but it feels like you're disrespecting me and you're disrespecting your colleagues. And there have been a couple of times when people have come by and they've needed some information. You haven't been here. Then it interrupts my day. So I'm writing this all out where I've got a series of talking points so I know where the conversation is going to go. And it also left her with a clearer understanding of what the issue was so that she could remediate it, you know, fix it.
Which sets her up for success.
That's right.
Confrontation should always be a means to a positive outcome, not just a venting session.
Well, and we didn't say that before. I don't think we even got it on our notes here, but that's actually probably another step, but is to get really clear what the outcome is you want. You know,
that's great.
What's the behavior you want to fix or whatever, but get clear on the outcome.
And I think if we don't take time to do that, because our emotions are so powerful, that it ends up just being that unloading or that venting, and we don't really have clear in our mind that we do have this positive outcome that we're shooting for. And for her, for your assistant, I'm sure she turned around and could be on time, and you set her up for that kind of success.
Well, she was mortified, and obviously that was a habit that she had to overcome. Mm-hmm. So there were times when she slipped, but she certainly turned it around.
That's great. Okay, so let's move on to step number 5.
And here it is.
Yeah.
This is the very one we were talking about. It was the next one, which is to be clear about what you expect and what you want. In other words, what's it going to take to fix this situation? And in my case, I said to her, I expect you to be here no later than 8:30 in the morning. And I've got to have you there. So I was very clear. Mm-hmm. I need for you to do this. And I want to do whatever I can to help you. Is there anything in the way, anything I can do to help? You know, but I'd be very clear with what I want.
And so as we go through these steps, by the way, these really are done in order. So you do start with the affirming the commitment in the actual conversation itself. You start with that affirming the commitment to the relationship. You outline the issue as objectively as possible, and then you move to expectations.
Yep.
But that comes after you've established kind of this trust of I value you, you value me, this relationship's important, this is what I'm struggling with, this is the issue, and this is what I want to see the result be.
That's exactly right. And like that conversation I referred to with Gail, you know, she just wasn't ambiguous about what she wanted me to do. She just said, I really need you to be here for dinner every night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know there might be some exceptions, you may be traveling, but I really need you to make an effort to be here for dinner every night.
That's a very clear and specific goal.
It was. And so I just said, okay, I can do that. You know, maybe I can go earlier. Maybe I can just manage my workload differently. I mean, you figure it out. You know, you've heard that old adage, it's somebody's rule. I can't remember who, but the work expands to the time allotted for it. And that's true. And I just knew that no matter what, I was going to leave the office by 6 p.m. every night.
Okay.
So I got home for dinner.
That's great. And I'm sure because it was a positive confrontation outcome, it reaffirmed her.
Yes.
And it reaffirmed her and brought you closer together, strengthened the relationship.
It did. And obviously it wasn't the last time we had that conversation.
No, I'm sure.
But yeah, she was willing to risk that to go into the conversation. It really helped me. It helped us. It helped our family.
All right. So what's the final step then to effectively using confrontation?
Well, this is one you've got to be really careful with, but is explain the consequences, both positively and negatively. In other words, if you're willing to adjust your behavior, this would be so awesome because here's what the result's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So in my assistant's case, what I'm trying to explain to her is how by being on time, she communicates respect to me. She communicates respect to her colleagues. She's able to serve the team better. And it just brings the whole thing up a notch. And so to not do that, what are the consequences of that? You know, I've got to have, and sometimes this is implied and it can't feel like manipulation, but in her case, I said, if you can't do that, I need to know now because I've got to have an assistant here that's 8:30. And if that's not you, then I'm going to have to find somebody else that can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So is this something you can do or not?
And she said, yes, absolutely.
She said, yes, absolutely. But I think you have to give people that choice. They have to have that buy-in. They have to understand the consequences. They can't be ambiguous. It can't be a veiled threat.
Yes.
I was totally willing to do that. I come to the place where I said, if she can't show up on time, I've got to find somebody else.
It's too important.
It's too important.
But at that point, you've already affirmed that she's valuable, that you like her on your team.
I want her to win.
You want her to be on your team. So you have no desire for her to go elsewhere.
Right.
But this is such a critical requirement or a critical need that she either needs to step up or then we can move on if it's not a good fit.
That's right. Now, in the situation where it was the reverse with Gail talking to me, you know, what she didn't say is, look, I need to know if you can be on time because if you can't,
I'm going to have to find somebody else.
I'm going to find somebody else. And you know, with some behaviors, it may get to that point, you know, but she just made it very clear. Look, if you can't do this, my fear is that our family is going to suffer.
Uh-huh. And that would be the consequences. Not
That's
that she would replace you, but that
she might. You...
Let me know.
I didn't let
Gail.
It get that far.
If he doesn't shape up, you know, I can whip him into shape. Yeah. But we have to let people know kind of what. Well, again, it's spelling it out for both of us of what the outcomes are.
Yeah.
There's really, we're going to go one direction or the other, and that you have the power in order to change that if we can work on this together.
Totally. I had another guy that worked for me, and then he actually worked one level below me. But he had this really old school behavior of intimidating his subordinates and had several of them complain to HR and come to me. And so I sat down with him and then the person who he ended up reporting to sat down with him. And this guy needed to be clear what the consequences were. If he didn't change this behavior, we're going to have to get rid of him. I mean, we just couldn't let him affect the culture and poison the culture. And we really worked with him over the course of about 6 months. He never would change, but he always knew what the consequences were. And so we finally said to him, we told you from the beginning, if you couldn't fix this or you wouldn't fix this, and this is really a case of you wouldn't, not you couldn't, but because you wouldn't fix this, we're going to have to let you go. And we did.
Well, and at that point, I'm sure it's still not a pretty situation, but it's such an easy transition. You've set all the steps in place. So it's very clear what's next. It's still not pretty, but...
Well, and you have a better chance of preserving the relationship if people know what's coming.
Yes.
Because the thing he couldn't say to me is, oh my gosh, you changed the rules, or to a supervisor, you changed the rules. I never knew that was on the table or that was a consequence. He knew from the beginning.
He knew
that this was serious.
Okay, so let's talk about when the confrontation doesn't work, kind of like what you were just describing. These six steps are fabulous. I mean, they're just excellent, which for me, being someone who struggles with confrontation, I've been literally, for those who are listening, not watching, I'm taking notes as we go through this podcast, because it's truly a great process to go through. But just because you do the steps, the right steps, doesn't mean you're going to get the right outcome.
That's right.
So what happens if you go through all these steps, you handle it beautifully? Let's say you just handle this confrontation like a pro. It's just amazing. And yet still the other person flips out, gets angry. There's this whole big meltdown, whatever. The confrontation just really goes south. What do you do then?
You know, there's not much you can do at that point. I mean, it depends on the context, you know, because in some situations, like if it's an employee, and if it's the right kind of damage, or I should say the wrong kind of damage in a corporation, you may have to get somebody else involved.
Okay.
It may be HR. It may be their supervisor. There's a number of paths that you can take. You may not be able to just let it go. You may have to take it, you know, escalate it to the next level. But in most situations, that doesn't happen. You know, it's not like in a personal relationship. There's not any way that to escalate it, you know, reasonably. And so you might just have to separate.
Okay.
Over that. You may not be able to continue to walk with that person in the same way that you have been previously.
Now, in a situation where, well, like in a marriage or something, where you are in that relationship, committed to that relationship, and that confrontation just doesn't seem to happen well, the temptation sometimes is to say, well, the process doesn't work, and just throw it out and go back to your old way. But that's not, you know, sometimes you just need to continue using the same process, even if you're not getting the right results. And maybe over time, even that example will help create an environment of safety that confrontation can have a better result.
Yeah, I think it's tougher in a marital situation because your only alternative may be to just continue to love that person and continue to pray for them and, you know, hope they come around.
Or even in a close friendship, you know, or, you know, something like that.
I've got one of those right now. We need to talk about the boss situation.
Oh, yes, please.
Because that's a tough one. So
just to recap, this is if you have a boss that there's a situation where you feel a need to confront the boss on something that's significant, you know, something that really needs to be addressed. So how do you enter into a confrontation situation when you're actually doing a level up?
Because it feels very precarious.
Oh, well,
and
there's
because
so
it is.
Much at stake.
There is. So I had this boss who... it was one of the new owners of our company when we sold it, and he was the chairman of my board, and we missed our sales numbers 1 month. And so I sent an email, not only to him, but to the other board members and to my executive team reporting on the previous month. I was very matter of fact. This is something I did every month. You know, here were the results, and here's what I think drove the results. Well, he did one of those reply all instead of a reply just to me. And he lived in another state, so he wasn't there face to face. So he did a reply all, and he basically said, "What the blankety blank happened? Do you guys have any idea what you're doing?" And I mean, just basically chewed me out in an email, but he did it in front of my peers.
But he copied everybody. He
copied everybody in my subordinate.
So it was more of a shaming kind of situation than anything else.
So initially, I was fried.
Oh, of course.
You know, I was ticked off, was ready to quit, all that stuff, cooled down. And I said, you know, this is not good for the organization. It's not good for him. Maybe he didn't even realize he copied everybody. So I gave him the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
But I said, I've got to confront it. So this felt very consequential.
Well, and you feel like your job's on the line as well.
Totally.
Some employers, if you dare to confront them, they just don't want to have anything to do with you anymore.
Yeah. And I've not been in this situation many times, probably half a dozen times, where I feel like I'm risking my reputation, I'm putting everything on the line, but I must do it to go forward. Otherwise, the alternative is just that I kind of stuff it and somehow diminish myself in the process. And it's like everybody in the organization is also waiting to see how I'm going to react, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I slept on it overnight, I had a conversation with Gail about it. And I said, look, I've got to confront this person about this. And I just, you need to know that this may not go well. You know, this may result in me getting terminated. I said, I hope that's not the case, but I can't not confront it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course she said, and we've had the situation a few times, she said, absolutely do what you need to do.
Okay.
So I didn't reply to the email. I picked up the phone and called him because you can't do this kind of stuff via
email. No, it can't be email.
And so I did exactly.
In fact, it's typically best face-to-face if you can.
Absolutely. And if I could have done it face-to-face, I would have. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't possible. So I picked up the phone. I called him. We made, you know, small talk. It was one of those kind of things, too, by the way. He was just, like, even unaware. It was like he was on to the next thing.
Uh-huh.
And so we talked, and I said, look, I want you to know I'm really committed to your success. I want nothing more than for you to succeed as the chairman of my board and the person who bought our company and all that. But I have to talk to you about that email that you sent yesterday.
Was there heavy silence
Dead
on the phone?
Silence.
Because I can feel the tension just talking about it.
I said, I'm not sure you're aware that you copied everybody on that. But I said, it was very embarrassing to me. I think it undermined my leadership with the team. And it was probably the right message. I said, in private, you can say whatever you want to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, you cannot do that in public. And then I tried to explain to him how it was hurting him. I said, it made you look small.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't serve the process. It undermined my authority. It doesn't help us accomplish the objectives that we're all committed to.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did the consequences thing. I said, I want you to commit. I'm asking you to commit to me. Again, you can say anything you want, but if you've got something harsh like that to say, you come to me directly.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if you can't do that, we need to part company.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I cannot work in this kind of environment. This is just I literally use these words. I said, this is unacceptable behavior.
Was that hard for you to say? Did you have to take a couple deep breaths before or were you strong enough about it at that point that it just needed to be said?
I was really weak-kneed and scared up until the moment I started.
Okay.
And then I was on a trajectory that I'd already, you know, laid out. And
yes.
I knew exactly where the conversation was going, and then it was just a matter of execution. So I delivered all that, and I said, this was unacceptable behavior. And he said, took a deep breath, and he said, you're absolutely right. I am so sorry. It'll never happen again. And it never did.
Do you know that? Okay, that says something about him.
It does.
I mean, there's not many people that I know of that have such a, you know, that's a strong leader with a sense of humility.
Yes.
That he was able to receive that and admit it so quickly, too.
But you know, sadly, and this is what so often happens in a corporate context, guys get away with that. Nobody ever calls them on the carpet. And so they don't grow in their leadership.
Yes.
And they would give anything to have people be honest. I had a consultant one time. I was sitting in a team meeting, and she said to me, she pulled me aside after the meeting, she said, who are you mad at? And I said, well, I'm not mad at anybody. She said, yeah, you are. I said, no, I'm really not. And she said, well, you need to tell your face because it looks like you're mad and you're intimidating your own team. Well, for her to call me out on that was so valuable.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because I had no
idea. You're so thankful. Uh-huh.
So it was very helpful.
Such good advice. We're going to wrap up, but before we do, do you have any resources that you would recommend on this topic? Anything that would be helpful to people or any other ideas?
Well, first of all, there probably are. And if you're listening to this and you've got an idea of a resource, leave it in the comments.
Oh, that would be great.
Because I don't really have one.
Okay.
You know, I think it's frustrating. There's probably a lot of books written out there and people will tell us about it in the comments, but I don't have one.
You know, one that came to mind is Dr. Henry Cloud's book, Necessary Endings. It just has some really good advice about having difficult conversations. And
that book, chapter 7.
Oh, look it. He knows the chapter.
I know the chapter because it's a long story. But yes, I used that chapter 7 to have a confrontational discussion with somebody that I needed to have a discussion with.
Uh-huh.
And that chapter was hugely helpful. Also, his book, Henry Cloud and John Townsend's book, Boundaries,
yes,
is also excellent.
True. To the Necessary Endings, it actually helped me to be less afraid of confrontation. And just because he normalized it through, especially in the opening chapters of the book,
pruning,
that it's just kind of part of life. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is, you know, having those kind of endings in relationship or at least having those difficult conversations is part of life. So very helpful to me. Well, if you've enjoyed today's conversation, you can get the show notes and an entire transcript of the whole episode at michaelhyatt.com. If you'd prefer to watch the video rather than just the audio, you can find a complete video of this episode again at Michael's website, which is michaelhyatt.com. Do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I would just say when you think about confrontation, as much as all of us like to avoid it, lean into it and realize that it creates all kinds of possibility. You really can take the most important relationships to a deeper level if you're willing to speak the truth, but do it in love.
So confrontation is no longer a bad word.
That's right.
All right. Thank you for being with us today. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Do what matters. On the next episode of This Is Your Life, Michael and I are going to talk about waiting seasons and what you can do while you wait to make the most of your time.
To me, part of the threat in waiting is that it can derail us and take on a much more significant role than it should. So instead of being about what we should be about, which is helping people, serving people, whatever, we get derailed and caught up in our own drama. Mm-hmm. And if we can be prepared a little bit more, you know, we're able to serve.
That's next time on This Is Your Life.